Ladies and gentlemen, would you please take your seats? Would you take your seats, please? We would like to start in time because there's a lot of things going on and some of our panelists have to hurry on. That's very kind. Anybody outside still? So, that's great.
Okay, we can start. Welcome, all of you. I hope there is a translation in his work.
Yes, we have translation available.
I can start this.
From Italian to English, and from English to Italian.
Perfect.
And the channels you have to choose is number 2 for English and number 4 for Italian.
Thanks for the information. Allora, un grande benvenuto. Thank you very much to all of you. Thank you for being here today. I think this is a very important meeting and I'm very happy to have co-financed it. This is a very important room and it's not a random choice. We decided to choose this room for such a great event. Next to us there's the hemicycle for the plenary session, but that would have been too much. Anyways, it's just to show you how much importance the Parliament dedicates to this topic regarding the work that has been done and that will be done in the future. I would like to welcome all of you. In particular, I would like to thank the responsible Mr. Zitter, Ziering, who represents the Nereus Association, which is chaired by my Italian colleague, that was president of the Apulia region. And I would like also to welcome my colleague Aschbacher, representative of the European Space Agency. We welcome you with a great pleasure because you actually started your mandate since a few days ago, so we wish you all the best for your future career and for the work of the European Space Agency within the international and European framework. As you know, in the European Commission, we are drafting the European Space Policy and Strategy, which at the moment is undergoing a phase of consultation, based, of course, on what will be the reactions from the members and the indications that will be given in the future. The strategy then will be presented in the Parliament. I would like to thank also my colleague members of the Parliament. I'm sorry if I don't welcome you all, but this is only because I don't see you. I'm quoting this column because from the Committee for Industry, we have responsibility on the space policies. Our committee, ITRE, Welfare Committee. We also deal with all other sectors, such as research and energy. And research, of course, is part of the supporting tools of this activity carried out by Nereus. I believe that within this European space policy, it is very important to mention the activity of Copernicus. Copernicus was implemented, and it has always been a success story. Not all our initiatives and activities actually are a great success, or maybe we actually realize that afterwards, after having faced a few challenges and mistakes in the activity of the Commission or any other stakeholders. But in this case, we actually see great success that are actually the outcomes of a great commitment and a great work of all the stakeholders that constitutes a public institution, a common institution that anyone else could have created, but Europe did. And so I believe this is a great sense of pride for us, because even us, the strongest member states, actually are praising this initiative in a day where the European Parliament is discussing about the Brexit. So I believe this is an answer that provides an example of a strong Europe in research, in industry, in energy, and in any other sector for the future. It is a common good, a public infrastructure that provides us with information tools. You know that recently the European Commission actually opened a cloud for all researchers in order to connect them, to link them. We are talking about more than 1,700,000 researchers in Europe that will have access to all the results and outcomes of the researchers. Sometimes all the outcomes of our research, they actually remain a niche. They remain at the disposal of very few people. Now, with this cloud, we can share it with among all of us. We can provide this information and give the availability of such data. And I think this is very important, because we need a Europe that allows the free movement of information and that allows also the sharing of these positive outcomes. Another point that I would like to underline, because in many regions of my country are part of it, is the involvement of the local and regional authorities. I can quote a few of them in Italy, and allow me to do that because it's my national pride. I'm talking about Lombardy, I'm talking about Apulia, I'm talking about Tuscany and many other, and I apologize if I don't mention all of you, that actually had a fundamental role, and they were able, through punctual project and very precise project within Copernicus and within the seventh framework program within Horizon 2020, they were able to organize this work of networking, of dissemination of information, of training, which is very important. All these regions, they were actually the main actors for this change, and they were part of this common research infrastructure. I believe that Nereus and ESA projects created this big network, and they also were able to involve all the small and medium enterprises that, along with bigger international enterprises and undertakings, were able to release certain outcomes and provide information on to these results. And I believe that in many European countries, including mine, there are even some districts, some areas in which small and medium enterprises, they complement space activity, they're linked to it, they contribute to it, and actually they were able to develop further innovation technologies that are paramount for the production and the productive basis of a country, because this is the value. The value chain is long, is very complex. It goes sometimes beyond the country in which we produce. And so this value, of course, gives birth to many issues such as and many abilities and expertise such as consistency, efficiency, development, and any other sectors that I had the opportunity to get to know through this EU space policy, the territory management, the prevention of regional and local issues, the safeguarding of cultural heritage, and these are all projects that are part of a great success and also are coming from smaller projects. We all know how Horizon works, and if in the future would be necessary, we will still guarantee this networking among all of you, because now we are in the final phase of debate of a short-term financial program of Horizon. And in this phase, I believe that we should actually set our priorities for the European Union and try to decide whether we need to increase resources or whether we need to address resources in other sectors. So I believe that the way you're working now and how you will do in the future is paramount, and if at any point you would like to talk to me or to my colleague from the ITRE committee, you are more than welcome to do that, because your work is very important, because this can be also the drive for a better result, and it should be supported by all of us. So I would like to welcome. I apologize, but I have to go because I have to replace a colleague who unfortunately couldn't be able to attend a meeting because of the Brexit issue, and so I need to replace him and I need to leave. I hope I will be able to come back for the conclusion of this meeting. Otherwise, I will ask my colleagues to tell me how it was. So I would like to welcome you to all the MEPs and all the participants, and I wish you a very fruitful meeting, and I really salute your work. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mrs. Stoya. I really love politicians who speak not according to a manuscript, but really speak from their heart. And from that point of view, you made a great introduction into the issue. We also have another representative of the Parliament here, Mr. Marinescu, who also wanted to say a few words for the introductory panel. You have the choice. You can join us on the panel here, or you can speak from your space. Please.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I am very sorry that I asked to speak now. I have also to leave because I have to chair a meeting. The program changed because of all the plenary, what happened today in the Parliament. Thank you very much for invitation. Thank you very much for this event, which I think it's very important for the space policy, European space policy. 2016, it's a very important year, in my opinion, for the space policy. First, because in the autumn, Commission should come out with the strategy for the space policy. And it's a very important document, in my opinion. Space technology now, it's a very important component for the European economy. More than 7% of GDP is based on space technology, so we have to take care for now and for the future of this industry, of this area of industry. So I don't want to emphasize again the importance of the programs, European programs, Galileo, Copernicus, EGNOS, and I hope in the future GovSat.com program, depends which variant will be selected. So we have to take care of these programs, and it's important, 2016, it's important also because this year the Commission will come out with the revision of the MFF, actual MFF, and with the proposal for the future MFF. So all these two documents should provide the financing of the European satellite space programs. And we have to think about the new technologies, the new satellites, to improve the performances. If you are talking about Copernicus, to improve the resolution, and of course for Galileo, also the for all programs, the security, the cyber security, security for space, weather, debris, and of course we have to provide the security of launching, because it's also very important. And for this we need financing, and we have to take care, all of us, of the documents that the Commission will come out, MFF revision and the new MFF, to provide the financing for these programs. We have these programs, but in the same time we need applications. And I am very glad that the money provided in Galileo regulation are used now by the Commission for applications. And for this we need R&D. R&D is very, research and development is very, very important. And I hope the Horizon plus the money, the amounts provided in Galileo regulation will assure the need for research. And I started to promote in the last period the need, in my opinion, for a joint undertaking for space research and development. There are some that are already very successful, if we are talking about Clean Sky or CESAR, let's say in a nearby area. I think that we need also a joint undertaking for the space R&D. All industry in this domain to come together and to find the best solutions to use the systems that are up there and to for the benefit of the citizens. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Marinescu. As you've seen, we've already jumped into the water. We had prepared an introduction and so on, but as we live in times in which business doesn't function as usual, we also will now continue with a little bit more structured approach. Let me tell you a few things about the organizations, because things you should know. The interpretation works well, I think, so everybody understands and understood what was said so far. We are video streamed, and this video streaming is functioning in a way that once you put on your mic and you want to speak, the cameras will focus on you. So be aware of that. So I hope you've all put your makeup on, and we'll have, nevertheless, a very interesting debate afterwards. You've also got some materials in your bag, the bag that was provided to you in the beginning. Take a look into it, because you will find a lot of presentations and documents that will be the issue for our discussions today. So that's all for now. So we now come to the part which I think is a very exciting one. It's the question that Mr. Marinescu and also Mrs. Toya were also asking, is what actually these satellite programs can do for the people, what they can do for the regions, for the communities. And this is the question which we want to discuss today, and this discussion brings to an end a project that has been going on for quite a while and presents its results. And you are invited then afterwards to join the discussion in a third round. So we are going to have now a first small panel where the two parts, ESA on the one hand and Nereus on the other hand, are presenting their view on this, what the Sentinels can do for the regions. Then we are going to have a panel where the regions will speak and where the regions will present what their experience is so far. And then we are going to have a second panel, which is a more political one, where we will discuss the framework of what has to be done for the further development. And so after this third and last panel, we are going to open the debate to the floor, and then you can also join. I think it's going to be a very short while for you. I hope so. And keep your questions for the last round available. So I would hand the floor now to Mr. Josef Aschbacher. He is actually a very, he's for a long time at ESA, but he is now in charge of a new position, actually the 1st of July officially, but the nomination has already taken place. He's a director of Earth Observation, and he's taking over from Mr. Volker Liebig, who is actually his predecessor. He joined ESA at the Center of Earth Observation, ESRIN, in Italy in 1990, so you are very experienced already with Earth Observation. And now he's going to take you to what ESA is actually preparing to help the regions with satellite data. Please, Mr. Aschbacher.
Thank you very much. You're mentioning my first entry to ESA, which also shows how old I am, and this is always frightening. But no, thank you very much. I'm really pleased to be here at the European Parliament, and thank you for the invitation by MEP Patrizia Toia, member or the vice chair of ITRE, which is extremely welcome and I think really important for us as ESA, as the European Space Agency, to be here and to really work very close together with the Parliament. Also, I really appreciate that many other parliamentarians and guests are here at this event, and I really hope that we can somehow highlight what the Sentinels can do for the regions. Before saying that, maybe just to really acknowledge the role of Parliament in the past, we have been, and some of you may remember, going through a rather complicated and difficult process in agreeing and approving Copernicus budgets in the current MFF. This was all around 2012-2013, when the negotiations were very tight and some proposals were suggesting that the funding of GMES, as it was called at this time, may be put outside the MFF funding, and this of course would have been a disaster for the program. And I have to say, thanks to the Parliament, the very strong support of Parliament and the Member States, the funding of GMES and now renamed to Copernicus has been introduced into the EU budget, and therefore I think today has a really bright future and is extremely well placed and stands on very good feet in order to really implement and execute the program now. So really thank you to the Parliament for having played its strong role in assuring the future of Copernicus. So what is Copernicus, or what are the Sentinels doing? This is, there are some slides which are running in the background. I'm not talking to them, but they are more for illustration, but they are showing some of the examples of what Copernicus and Sentinel data can measure and what are they showing and what information can be derived. First of all, we are in the midst of building up the Sentinel space component or Copernicus space component. We have launched today four satellites, the last one just a few weeks ago, and we are in the process of launching another seven by the end of next year to build up the first set of the constellation, the full constellation in the first round or in the first elements that are being funded. Comprises 15 satellites and five instruments flying on other satellites, in particular those of EUMETSAT, which are hosting a very important payload of the Copernicus program in terms of Sentinels. So altogether, there are six families of Sentinels that are being constructed, that are being built right now, and as I said, some of them launched already. They are delivering important data of the Earth system, of all parameters of the Earth system. The water surfaces, the land surfaces, the atmosphere, the cryosphere, and really the overall system of the planet Earth, which has to be better understood in order to really manage it better and have better information for decision makers at national level, at regional level, at local level, to really get information that is required for their daily life. This information is quite diverse. It covers many different aspects, for example, agriculture. Some of the Sentinels, Sentinel-2 in particular, is very well suited to monitor agricultural production, but also to warn decision makers or farmers at an early stage if there is a shortage of production because there's drought, there's some other disease in the crops, and this can be monitored regularly and even together with models, algorithms and prediction models, you can estimate at an early stage what will be the yield of the main crops, for example, of Europe, of a country or even globally, which is of course extremely important for food security and national planning. but also forestry, in oceanography, there's many parameters that are measured with our sentinels. You see some examples which are on the background slides. Also the atmospheric composition, the quality of the air, again, parameters that are related to climate, which are measured through this sentinel series. So what is important about Copernicus or the Sentinel program? It is really the world-leading program in Earth observation to observe our planet Earth. And I'm really saying this with all the pride of being European, that we have managed in Europe to build up the best Earth-observing system in the world. For example, we are discussing very closely with America, with our friends in NASA, but also in NOAA, at the USGS, but also in Japan, in Australia, in other parts of the world, in other countries, and they're all very keen in getting access to our data, which are now starting to flow. And this is really something where I think Europe can be very proud to have established and gone through all the motions and difficulties of establishing such a program. It has not always been easy. I can really speak of my own experience. I've been in charge of Copernicus before I take on my current position for many, many years. And we have gone through very, very difficult times, difficult situations. If I recall that Copernicus, then called GMS, was initiated in 1998, then you can imagine how long it takes to really build up a program of this size and of this magnitude. But today it looks really good. I should also, and I really want to say this, especially these days, that Copernicus is a very good example where the European Space Agency and the European Commission with the European Union are working together extremely well and is really a success story. And I really think this is important to realize, to sometimes showcase success stories, and this is one of them where it works extremely well. So what is particular about Copernicus? I think one of the success criteria is not only that we build up a constellation of satellites measuring all these various parameters of the planet, we measure them, but also we provide this data to everyone for free. So free of charge, any user at any part of the world can access this data through a public website and download this data of his backyard, of his village, of his region, and really use this data in his daily life. Of course, what we provide as the European Space Agency is data, so that means images, basically, but in order to get from a data, from an image to a production of wheat over, say, Germany or France or Spain, of course you need algorithms and you need to add value, as we call it, in order to really retrieve that information which is needed on top. And this value adding is actually what really brings the economic benefit to Europe, through a lot of companies, SMEs, but also larger companies who are engaging themselves to convert raw data from our satellites into information that is useful. And there have been some estimates from, for example, PricewaterhouseCoopers, which were made about 10 years ago at the beginning of Copernicus, or the midst of Copernicus, I should rather say, when we have been, and one of the problems I had continuously to politicians to explain why do we need so much money in order to build up this constellation of satellites and in-situ measurements and ground-based systems for this monitoring system. I had to explain them not only that it's interesting scientifically or technically, but also that it creates value for Europe and for the economy. So we engaged PricewaterhouseCoopers as an external consultant. They did a very serious study, took a year and a half, and the net result was summarized, I mean, the thick report summarized in a few words, €1 invested in Copernicus can bring up to €10 back to the economy in terms of added value or gain to the economy because of the information which is provided. And I think this is a very impressive figure, which of course assumes that this value added or this economic benefit comes only under one condition, that the data that are being produced are provided free of charge. A more recent case, this was the Pricewaterhouse study, was a top-down study, a macroeconomic scale. We have also done some more detailed bottom-up studies. Just another figure, which we have done very recently, together with the European Association of Remote Sensing Companies, is to estimate, for example, what would be the benefit of using Sentinel data and their products for forest management in Sweden. one country in Europe, of course, very strongly involved in forest management. But what would be the benefit of using this data in their daily life because of better information they have? And the result was, of this bottom-up study, it's about 16.1 to 21.6 million per year. And this, again, is one country for 1 year, one small sector of forestry as an example. Another example was, again, by the same grouping, what would be the value or the benefit of using, again, satellite-based information in the Baltic Sea for ship routing in order to better predict icebergs or better ship routes, shipping routes based on wind information and, of course, ice information. Again, the result from a bottom-up analysis shows that the saving or the benefit is in the order of 24 to 112 million per year of for 1 winter in the Baltic Sea due to better information for the shipping industry. So it really shows that there's actual value or money which is being gained by using this information. And here I think we really come to the point of Nereus, of the regions, that this information, which of course is globally available, is most useful in local decision-making in the regions at local level, but also at country level. And I think here the regions really play a dominant role in translating this potential which we have into a benefit which can apply to their regions or to their area of interest. And therefore, we are really excited, and I'm personally very, very excited to see this study now concluded, as it was mentioned before. I should also say that we have done a study before that, which was producing a set of case studies, of examples, which is called The Growing Use of Copernicus Across European Regions, which is available from Nereus, which already lists some 67 cases of different regions in different domains. And it is really worth just flipping through and get an impression of what the value of these case studies is for various regions. I should say this was done in 2012. Today we have much better data, much better results, and actually we are thinking of redoing such a catalogue of examples because it is simply very useful. So this brings me to the end of my introduction. I really would like to thank the European Parliament for giving us this opportunity and accompanying this process. I really thank everyone here. I also want to personally thank Nereus for having conducted this work and being here, and of course Mr. Sieringer, who is Mr. Siering, the Secretary of State from Bremen, who is representing the President of Nereus, to really be here, give its full support politically, but also through power, through human resources, in order to make this happen. So thank you very much, and thank you for helping us in doing this study. Thank you, Nereus, and thank you to the European Parliament.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Aschbacher. It was impressive to hear the figures and impressive to see what else we can expect from this program. Mr. Siering was already mentioned as the Secretary of State for Economy from Bremen is actually very much and practically, operationally committed to the Nereus project. And you represent Nereus today because the president of Nereus isn't available, but he gives us his regards, I've heard. I give the floor to you. So please present your version, your vision, actually, what the Sentinels can do for the Nereus region so far. Thanks.
Thank you very much, dear members of Parliament, dear Minister Capone, dear Minister Liberali, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to start my introduction by thanking especially Mrs. Toya for hosting this conference today here in the European Parliament. Moreover, I would like to thank all involved actors for their efforts and their hard work to bring the initiative Improving Copernicus Uptake forward. I express my sincerest thanks to our partners at the Committee of the Regions and the European Space Agency. And I would like to congratulate to Mr. Aschbacher as a new ESA director. Congratulations to you. It's a great pleasure to celebrate today the outcomes of our joint initiative together. due to your commitment and input, we could realize a strong interregional project and learn more about the different Copernicus realities across Europe. We just heard the impressive presentation by ESA on the state of the Copernicus program that grows increasingly operational. We agree with you that Sentinels provide us with an incredible wealth of information. It is real treasury, but only if we use it. As regions and key users, we have a major responsibility for the development on the demand side, and more administrations need to make use of it. Ladies and gentlemen, today I speak on behalf of the Nereus Presidency and wish to share with you some of the findings of the initiative and to draw your attention to some conclusions of the lessons we learned. In general, we have to admit that a wider uptake of Copernicus across Europe is slowed down by complex barriers which are of political, economic, technical, as well as social nature. On the one hand, the potential of Sentinel data is an important source of information for decision-taking and long-term planning in our territories. However, only few solutions are ready to be actually deployed at the level of public administrations. In fact, although Copernicus grants free and open access, administrations need specific solutions that come along with additional services and products to actually use Copernicus satellite data. Public administrations face various drawbacks to really implement these solutions in their working procedures. Let me summarize my view on the challenges ahead. First of all, political will is essential. The political will of a region is an important driver for improving the use of Sentinel data. To motivate politicians to introduce new technologies and processes, which might even come with additional costs, the benefits and added value have to be clearly demonstrated. Promoting a better public understanding and awareness at regional level is the starting point. We need a targeted promotion campaign addressing both the political level as well as the experts and administrations in Europe. Second, to convince decision makers across Europe, we need to promote successful model projects and best practice. We need to demonstrate their impact on our regional economies. In this respect, we need more socio-economic data and information concerning the use of Copernicus and a better knowledge of the situation in our regions. This kind of information has to be shaped for the needs and attention of regional policy makers. Third, we should not limit our perspective to the socio-economic benefits, but emphasize the benefits for our citizens. This is another important factor that will contribute to gain political support. Sentinel imagery provides important information for citizens' needs that can't be expressed in financial terms, such as air quality or support for the emergency circle. And fourth, we need a certain technical and expert level in order to improve the implementation in our administrations. Decision-taking depends on different hierarchy levels. When it comes to the operational level, we discovered that there's a lack of adequate training opportunities for interested staff members and the need to build knowledge within our administrations. Therefore, promotion and training of relevant staff and bringing Copernicus opportunities more into the context of administrative responsibilities and takes is another vital avenue to improve the situation. And fifth, a stronger presence of Copernicus at regional level and opportunities to gain experiences with Sentinel users are important for a better acceptance. It turns out that the once established regional contact offices has been a great success to promote the use of space applications. Regional activities and support structures are crucial for developing user communities, gathering information on specific user needs and networking. In particular, when it comes to linking space with non-space sectors and defining growth opportunities for space, the regional scale is privileged. Setting synergies between the development of Copernicus applications and regional policies and strategies can only be done efficiently at regional levels. Ladies and gentlemen, let me come to my last point. A key finding of our initiative was the fundamental importance of interregional corporations and networking when it comes to engaging with Copernicus. In fact, if regions want to be successful on the path to broader use of Sentinel data, sharing of best practices, exchanging experiences and knowledge, working together is crucial. It helps us to learn from other regions and also address the broad range of economic and technical drawbacks together. When you look at Copernicus application domains such as mountains, coasts, oceans, lakes, forests, they go beyond national borders. We can gain a lot when regions manage to establish stable collaboration and dialogue structures amongst them across borders. We are ready to engage closer with our partner regions on these subjects and are glad to have Nereos as a platform to facilitate and stimulate closer partnerships. Coming to an end, I would like to say a few words about my region, Bremen, Free Hanseatic City of Bremen, which is one of the most important space regions in Germany and in Europe. Bremen is home of two important global players in space industries. It's Airbus on the one hand and OHB on the other hand. Bremen is known for developing and integrating satellites for navigation as well as upper stages of rockets. We have competences in Earth observation and communication in space infrastructures for astronautical and robotic missions as well as in systems for exploration. Furthermore, we have three universities and a large number of research institutes and innovation companies with outstanding expertise in robots. As a maritime region with a big port, we are strongly interested in maritime security, but also in offshore wind energy. To combine industry and applications efficiently, Bremen has been founding member of Nereos. I would like to conclude with saying that my hometown Bremen has learned that Nereos serves as an important tool to exchange knowledge and experience, as a strong voice of the regions in Europe, as well as an efficient network to improve the Copernicus services and application in a fruitful way for our citizens. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, Mr. Ziering. These were very clearly formulated challenges that the program faces for the future, and I think we will all go into detail now when we hear the representatives of the regions. We will need just a minute time to change the setup. I thank the first panel, and I shall probably remind Mr. Aschbacher that there is a small presence for all the panelists waiting. When you go down these stairs, perhaps Mr. Ziering would be the first candidate to get to get one. I think the first round has been informative on the macro level, on the view of what is planned and what has been achieved so far. Now let's go into the details. So I would like to invite the representatives of the regions to join the panel. And, I know where you are, so I see... Great. So in this panel, we are going to have short presentations from five of the regions, but these are not all the Nereos regions. Nereos, by the way, sounds Greek. It is Greek, and it comes from mythology. It's actually, I've looked it up, it's the son, the eldest son of Pontus, the sea, and Gaia, the earth. Yes. The Azores, please. Yeah. Yes. Great. And I find it is a great name for such a program because it refers to those places which are covered by satellite data, both the Earth and the sea. And from the regions represented here on the panel, we also have different regions, one more depending on seas, others more depending on Earth. We have this stick now. This stick allows you to forward your presentation. I would actually first give the floor to the Azores, to Mr. Nelson Simoes, did I pronounce it? Okay. Who will tell us about the Azores. We will then head forward to Bavaria, to Mr. Manfred Schröder, Professor Manfred Schröder, excuse me. We will then hear a brief statement from the representative of Lombardia and then the presentation of Lombardia by Silvia Fabrizi. And then we head on to Mazovia in Poland and then to Valonia in Belgium. So it's quite a journey we take. And the farthest point from here is where the weather comes from the Azores. Mr. Suhaj, please.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good afternoon. Azorean authorities are aware about Copernicus, and we are exploiting, we are learning what Sentinel can do for us. We are nine islands in the middle of the Atlantic, a quarter of a million people, and we have very, very specific aspects that eventually could be, or we could benefit many from art observation, those from Sentinel. We are in a volcanic region. We have a volcanic origin, and we have very active seismicism. We are in the middle of the Atlantic, where we have intense maritime traffic from between Europe and America. We have a very large maritime zone with, we suppose, very important resources. And finally, we are in a place where atmospheric phenomena are quite important, those why we are known in Europe. So we suppose that in Azores we have a large number of specific aspects in which art observation and the data of the art observation can be used and fruitful for us. For instance, in civil protection, we are subject, as I told, to extreme weather conditions. We have very sea episodes that are sometimes dangerous. We have volcanic activity. This volcano happens 15 years ago, but more recently we have another one. And as I told, we are in a very large ocean where we need to know about the traffic, about the shipping of the vessels, about oil spills. But where we can also have information about fishery surveillance, species occurrence, and activity supervision. But we have also other aspects that are very important for us. For instance, is environmental protection, the knowledge about natural resources, living and mineral, and also about land management. All of these are aspects that we are learning to apply and to exploit art observation and information from Sentinel. Now we are trying to create platforms to facilitate exchange of knowledge, first of all among regional authorities, different departments, but also we are very interested to exchange information between the different regions in Europe. We are trying to build capacity to improve the technical resources and to create a knowledge first and to exploit these resources. And again, we need the cooperation of the different regions, of different stakeholders, either in ASERS and also in Europe. So we suppose, and regional authorities suppose, they have to gain many about the use of Sentinels. And as I told you in the beginning, we are learning about this. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mrs. Suraj. You mentioned it already, the regions gathered here and the panel are on a different level of how they use the satellite data and what they do with it. You didn't mention the partnership you were in, so you worked with Bremen, I think, in this case?
No, I represent the regional government. I mean the
yeah, but there was a cooperation already under the NIREOS framework, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And yes. The region you cooperated with was, which was the region in Europe you cooperated with?
Yeah, we are learning in NIREOS. We are learning the different possibilities in the different regions. We have participated in this workshops.
Okay.
And we have a workshop in ASERS in September last year, and we have assisted and we have participated in the other workshops. It was developed under NIREOS, and actually we are already participating in two European programs, one under the H2020 and another with Madeira and Canarias in the, another project from the MAC.
Okay.
From Madeira and Canarias.
So you're going to continue. Good. Well, let's move to the right. You have your... Yeah? The pointer. That's right. Very good. Yeah. Let's move to the right, actually, to Bavaria. Professor Schröder, actually, what are your experiences with the use of satellite data?
I think we have a lot of experience gained in the last decades, I can already say. At the moment, I'm representing the Bavarian Copernicus office. This office exists already since nearly 10 years and is part of the association Bavaria. That is an organization that manages the Bavarian aerospace cluster. And we are authorized by the State Ministry of Economic Affairs. Last year we organized a Copernicus workshop in Munich together with NIREOS for ESA. And our partner region for this workshop was Wallonia. Back, please. some words to the region. In terms of area, Bavaria is the largest of the 16 federal states of Germany. Bavaria is even larger than some of the national EU member states. Bavaria is, of course, very industrialized, but nevertheless, 85% of its territory is covered by rural areas. Therefore, agriculture and forestry are very important economic factors for Bavaria. Mainly for these two application areas, Copernicus services can and will be used. In a study on the demand of Copernicus for Bavaria, 23 processes relevant to Copernicus in regional agencies and public authorities were defined and described in more detail. Four of these application proposals have been selected for urgent and early realization. These are indicated by these four images on this slide. Status of forest vitality, assessment of green fodder crop production on the upper right, monitoring of soil surface movements in former mining areas, and assessment of safety of animal feed on the lower right. Furthermore, land cover, land use, and water quality of inland waters of importance for Bavaria. For all this application, best practice examples were presented at the Munich workshop in last year. Slide is very small. Yeah. This slide is an example how the Bavarian State Institute of Forestry is using satellite data for forest mapping and forest inventories. One-third of the Bavarian territory is covered by forest. On the left side, you see the mapping of spruce forest for the whole state of Bavaria. This type of mapping is done for all groups of tree species. Since years, optical satellite images have been used for these purposes. Recently, also Copernicus Sentinel-2 data have been tested, and examples were shown at the Munich workshop. On the right side, you can see how radar images can be used to detect very fast, relatively small areas damaged by severe storm events. The 2 hectare of tree loss is encircled in red. This example was derived from the German radar satellite TerraSat-X, but in the future, also Copernicus Sentinel-1 data will be used. We think that important for an effective use of Copernicus data by regional agencies is their close cooperation with service-providing companies or research institutes. What are our recommendations for the further and future uptake of Copernicus? These are, first, we propose to support existing and new regional Copernicus contact offices. The support should come from the region itself, but also from relevant EU and ESA programs. In Bavaria, we made good experience with this type of coordinated actions. Second, innovative services based on both pillars of the European space infrastructure, namely Galileo and Copernicus, so-called integrated applications, should be developed and supported. These services should, for example, use mobile devices such as mobile phones or tablet PCs with dedicated applications for tourism, health, and environment, and so on. And third, we think that the visibility of Copernicus should be highly enhanced. For it, more successful application examples of previous EU and ESA pilot projects should be used to demonstrate the usefulness of Copernicus to potential EU users and to the public. At the same time, these demonstrations can show that the European industry is capable to deliver operational Copernicus services. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Schroeder. This was a very short but impressive view on what Bavaria already does in the field of satellite data. And I think the points that you've mentioned, development of applications, of integrated applications of the different EU program, the coordination of EU programs, and the exchange of best practices, I think these are three key points we can take away from your presentation. We now move a little bit southward to Lombardy or Lombardia, and I would invite actually two representatives of that region to give a brief overview on the use of satellite data. There is on the one hand Mr. Folco Ciulli, the representative of Lombardy in Brussels to the European Union, and Mrs. Silvia Fabrizi. She will take then over and present the results of the Lombardy efforts. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairman. As you said, I represent today Vice President of Regione Lombardia, Fabrizio Sala. He is very sorry not to be here today, but today the regional parliament discussed and voted the most important law proposed by his ministry. So he has to be there today. I want to thank on behalf of Vice President Sala, President Toia for her support and for hosting us. I want also to thank ESA for this fantastic collaboration, and I am sure we will continue our common job in this field. Finally, thanks to our partner in the workshop held in Milan, Midi Pirenei and Masovia. And last but not least, thank to Nereo Secretariat for the great job they have done in coordinating all these activities. Now I give the floor to Silvia Fabrizi. She is from CGS OHB, one of the most important aerospace industry in Lombardy and our partner in this project, and also in future strategic activities that she will now show you better than me. Please, Silvia.
Thank you, Folco. Thank you, everybody. May I have the switchboard? Thank you very much. So just a few words about the Lombardy and its territory. The Lombardy region is situated in the north of Italy in a strategic position along the main route linking Eastern and Western Europe. With a surface of about 24,000 square kilometers and almost 10 million inhabitants, it can be compared to a nation. For population, it's the fourth most populated region in Europe after North Rhine-Westphalia, Ile-de-France, and Baden-Württemberg. The Lombardy region is a very dynamic and competitive land. It is the first region in Italy to economic importance. The GDP amounts to 296 billion euro, and it represents almost 20% of the national value in Italy. The Lombardy region also hosts many important industrial, commercial, and financial players of the country. Now, thanks to its fortunate geographical settings and the initiative of its inhabitants, it stands out as a privileged interlocutor on the international economic scenario. The Lombardy is a densely populated region with a very high level of industrialization, including a wide natural area as well. In fact, over 40% of its territory is covered by the Alps, which represent the main water resource of the region. Nevertheless, the Lombardy region is a particularly fragile ecosystem, threatened by the climate changes. The air pollution, floods, droughts, and landslide are among the rising environmental issues. Now, these territorial challenges, from a certain point of view, represent a kind of opportunity for Earth observation services and technologies. The Lombardy region, together with ARPA, the Regional Agency for the Protection of the Environment, cooperate on Earth observation for 15 years in order to monitor the most critical environmental issue of the region. Lombardy region has been among the first European region to test and promote the use of satellite SAR interferometry, a sophisticated and very accurate Earth observation technology capable to assess the movements of landslide with millimeter accuracy. And since then, this technology has been successfully used around the world, and thanks to Sentinel-1 satellites of Copernicus, an exceptional capability of monitoring of landslide and ground movements in general is now possible. Moreover, to assess the level of criticality of water scarcity and drought in Lombardy, and to allow the region to perform some preventive action, ARPA Lombardia has developed a series of satellite Earth observation services that encompass the assessment of the amount of water stored in the snow park, which is a primary water assessed in Lombardy, and the estimation of crop water requirements. Now, the long course of anthropization in Lombardy has resulted in a large presence of buildings with the asbestos cement roof. The ARPA Lombardia has been mapping it since 2007 through the aerial Earth observation. And in order to provide the region with an assessment of the total amount of the present and removed amiantos covers. Moreover, the agricultural land consumption due to anthropic development is a further issue in Lombardy. Satellite Earth observation provides an effective tool to monitor the land consumption with early frequency. And since 2016, the geoportal of the region of Lombardy allowed the public consultation to up-to-date Sentinel-2 images of Lombardy acquired every 3 months. Now, it's quite evident for me how Copernicus and the Sentinel represent a huge potential for downstream application of Earth observation data and information. But so far, within the region, only a small part of the possible solution has been explored to meet the regional needs. The Earth observation can, in fact, benefit a lot of solutions, a lot of market sector, not directly related to the space domain, but can foster subsequent innovation, both in terms of Earth observation products and in terms of more efficient process in a specific tech sector. That's why the Lombardy region and the ARPA Lombardia are considering further developments. As you can see from the slide, the Lombardy region is part of a complex regional network in the field of Earth observation, which involves public users, universities, industries, the research sector, and this is a not exhaustive list. Now, being aware of such heterogeneity, the region is convinced that the existing network and their relationship should be fully exploited by using synergies on Earth observation as a leverage and strengthening the interaction between the demand on one side and the supply on the other side. Now, the Copernicus program represents a very great opportunity to improve the regional capacity in terms of knowledge and management through the acquisition of information. Within this framework, the Lombardy region and ARPA are supporting and promoting the creation of a regional center for Earth observation, the CREO. The aim of the CREO is to act as a facilitator between the needs expressed on one side by the region and the local and regional authorities, and on the other side, the existing potential technical solution to be developed by the aerospace cluster of the region, the aerospace cluster Lombardo, and which involve both industries and the research sector. In such a way, it will be possible to enhance and to develop the innovative services and solutions based on Earth observation through the integration of data from satellite, from helicopter, airplane, drones, in support to the regional policy. Now, so far, I have to be honest, this initiative is not yet become a reality. It's something on which the Lombardy region and the individual DGs are still working on. Anyhow, I think that even if it's not yet real, it represents a real will of the region, and that's why it's so important. No, thank you very much. Should you have any question, please take note, I'm sorry, of my email. I will be happy to address. Thank you.
Thank you, Sylvia. Very impressive presentation, too, and I think it's a good idea to exchange contacts. I think you all find these contact data also in the material in the bags that you've got. And if you have any questions, I think it's no problem if you contact Nereus or ESA. They will be happy to provide you with the contact data. We're now moving northwards to Poland, and we will hear now how a new, actually it's not so new anymore that you're a member of the European Union, but nevertheless a younger member of the European Union is making use of satellite data. I give the floor to Mrs. Elżbieta Łoszyńska-Wiśniewska i cieszymy się na pański wykład. Pani Juli.
Thank you very much.
May I ask for the pilot?
Yeah?
Yep.
Thank
Sorry.
You. Thank you very much. As you can see, the Mazovia, in Polish it's Mazowsze. Mazovia region is the central region of the country, of the capital, the city of Warsaw. The population is much bigger than the population in Brussels region, and it's over 5 million people. And also the area is much bigger. So we have similar situation like in Bavaria, because our region is predominantly agricultural area. Over 70% of the Mazovia region is covered by cultivated areas. However, we produce over 20% of country's GDP. The main branches of the economy present in the region are trade, telecommunication, financial services, insurance and IT, motor and petrochemical industry. Region is also an important node of the national road system. There are four main roads coming from north to south of Europe and from east to west. So we are right in the center. And the region is also important from an environmental point of view. Right next to the capital of Poland, Warsaw, there is a national park located. And we also have three big river valleys, Vistula, Bug and Narew rivers, which play an important role as ecological corridors. So such characteristics have an impact on territorial challenges and demand for Copernicus services. So we can identify four main challenges that our region faces. The first is dynamic urban areas development. Not only in the cities, but also outside the cities, so-called urban sprawl. Then the second one is a high use of transport system and demand for this transport system development. All these two challenges are related to human pressure on the environment. And as far as the environment is concerned, we also have some problems related to natural hazards, especially floods. And our main challenge is to stimulate economic development of these regions, taking into account all of these challenges. So we try to work in a way to relate economy, society, and also the environment. So to develop the region, taking into account the sustainable development rules. That's why, because of these four main challenges, we have an experience with Copernicus in two main areas. So I mentioned that one of the challenges was urban areas development. So we use Copernicus data, in particular urban atlas data, to monitor this urban development and to see if the development of these areas, especially near the cities or in the cities, if that's in line with the spatial management plans and spatial management documents. And the other issue, these are natural hazards. I mentioned floods. And on the slide, there is an example how we use Copernicus. At that time, it was called Safer service that was used in 2010 to assess the impact of the floods, one of the biggest floods in our country. So we used the service not only to estimate the impact of the flood, but also to plan how to deal with the situation and how to foster coming back to the normal situation. And what are the main messages and what are the main four issues that we try to deal with? First of all, capacity building. So we believe that the basic knowledge about the possibilities with using Earth observation tools and data will ensure the initial interest and motivate applications and services development, not only among local and regional authorities, but in particular in cooperation with service providers. So training can vary from a very initial introduction to Earth observation and its possibilities to courses on using Earth observation within information systems available in local and regional authorities. We believe that it's really important to connect Copernicus with the services that already exist. So the level of the training depends on the level of the staff working in the public administration. And what is also important in this capacity building for authorities, it is important to know how to talk to service providers. So that's especially important to the authorities intending to procure information needs to service provider. They need to know what they want to achieve and what is possible to be achieved using services and technologies available. What is also important is it's documentation. We call it catalog. I would maybe call it a matrix. Matrix showcasing, first of all, public staff competences and tasks, so responsibilities of public sector employees. On the other hand, this matrix would involve the needs of local authorities, local and regional authorities, but also available space-based solution and service providers. So it's important to connect all these four things together to prepare the catalog relating competences, skills, also with services, products provided by the business. And the last but not least, also things that were mentioned earlier, so platforms for exchange. Territorial challenges have no borders. We could also hear about floods in Lombardy and about some land use and land cover issues in Bavaria, for example. So that's why I believe that the public end users share similar problems, which can be solved by space-based solution coming from other regions. So that's why we believe in pan-European thinking and in cluster building, also to cope with the problems which are similar all over the Europe. Thank you.
Thank you, Elżbieta. We now move on to the final region. We had to wait a long time, but I think nevertheless it's worth. Nathalie Stempien is going to represent the results of the work with satellite data in Wallonia. And you have the floor, and the stick is just aside. Thanks.
Thank you. So thank you, Chairman. Thank you to ESA and Nereus to give us the opportunity to talk to you today. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Nathalie Stephen, and I'm working for the Scientific Institute for Public Services in Wallonia. I don't know if you know that. So ISEP. According to our status, ISEP is the sentinel for environmental management in Wallonia. So we are, of course, really interested to use sentinel data. This talk has been prepared with colleagues from administration, research center, private companies, and the Walloon Spatial Cluster. I suppose you know where is Wallonia. It's not far. There are 3.6 million people in the region, only three times the population of Brussels, with an area of 16,800 square kilometers. We have a population density of 200, while the density is double in the northern part of Belgium and more than 20 times in Brussels. So if you want a bit of nature, you know where you have to go. Welcome to Wallonia. So Wallonia has an industrial mining history with some specific territorial challenges. In fact, the economy was focused on coal mine exploitation in the 90s, and this industry has completely disappeared nowadays. So this closure explains partly the high unemployment rates in the region, but also the corridor of urbanization around the exploitation sites along the rivers, the Sambre and the Meuse. As you can see on these pictures, the mining past of the region is visible in our landscape, with coal heaps from Liège to Mons. This mining past causes some particular challenges, such as geotechnical risks and landslides, which are related to the coal waste materials, but also the galleries in the ground. So damages in the infrastructure or buildings, as you can see on the pictures, can result from failure or movement of the soils. Wallonia participated also to the workshop organized by Nereus ESA in Munich, addressing geotechnology for natural resources, because we share experiences with Bavaria and private companies there about opportunity of forest and biodiversity fragmentation related to urbanization and urban sprawl. The region in general has a strong historical interest in Earth observation, but in particular, Copernicus data with Sentinel-1 provides for us opportunities for landslide and land movement monitoring. As you can see on the figures, interferometry techniques process radar image, so Sentinel-1, to provide average motion rates and displacement of points. This can be really useful to study the earthquake or, in Wallonia, instability of the ground. Our research institute collaborates with administration as well as consortium with private companies and universities. We try to set up a link and reinforce the communication between these different small entities in this small region. So the key messages from the experience of Sentinel-4 region in Wallonia are twofold: the need for documentation and the need for more exchanges. In documentation, we did, in the last meeting, a SWOT analysis to work on our opportunities but also the threats, and we decided from that to carry out some cost-benefit analysis in all the ongoing projects. We also carried out some specific several users' needs survey inside the administration and inside the project. So the second message is the need for exchanges, and for that we set up two working groups in the last months, one inside the administration with their process, their way of talking and their rules, and the other one that integrates companies, universities, And of course, the goal is that these two groups are feeding each other with capacities, technical needs, infrastructure needs, or something like that, and all what my colleague explained today. And the final goal is, of course, to propose some recommendation for regional strategy, how to use Earth observation in law and planning. Thanks for you listening.
Thank you, Natalie. Before we switch the panels, I would like to give you the opportunity, actually, if you have questions to the regions, we can have a few questions now, just in case you would like to discuss something directly before, then we are going to switch to the more political panel. Yes, I will just give the number of the people that are, you have the number 92, and you should click now on the microphone, and please, whenever you ask a question or present yourself, tell us where you're from, and that's it. Thanks.
Hello, and thank you for all the presentations. I'm Koen Verberne, and I work in the Aurora program and Horizon 2020 Fund. That's a program to stimulate the use of atmospheric Sentinel data. Well, my question is to all of you, basically, but I guess there's not enough time that everybody gives an answer. So just if you feel the eagerness to answer, please do. My question is, when you're using Sentinel data, do you primarily do that by using the data yourself and extract information from the data, or do you work with private sector, or do you work, for example, with knowledge institutes? What's your experience on that?
Who would like to take the floor on that point? Yeah? Mr. Schroeder, please.
If the regional agencies or some public authorities will use this data, they are mainly cooperating with service-providing companies and some also with some research institutes. The research institute itself, they will, of course, use the Sentinel data directly. But a public agency will mainly cooperate with industry.
Other experiences, other views, or is it all the same? Yes, please.
I would only add one thing. In Mazovia region, the situation is quite similar, but as our experience shows, we are an NGO, so we are somewhere in between the public administration and private sector. And our experience shows that there is a problem in communication between public administration and private sector. So the ideal situation would be that the public administration needs data, needs information, maybe not data, information. So the public authority comes to the business and say, please provide us information, and they get it. It's not like that, because first of all, they have problem to say what they really need and what they really want. They don't know what it's possible to be delivered from the data existing. And from looking from the business point of view, they think that they have a very good product, but nobody wants it. And they wonder why. So there is still a lack of communication between these two actors, the public administration and the business. So it should be fulfilled to also to support the development, the financial situation of business. So just to develop the market for the products. We have a lot of data, but still there is a lack in the market of information.
Natalie, do you have something to add?
Yeah, just one more. So I think I would say the same as my colleague from Mazovia. We sometimes need a kind of translator between the need of the administration and the services that are used and provided by the public, by the private companies. And so the research center in Wallonia are trying to make this link between the two actors.
Yes, I think our idea with CREO is this one. because I think now we need integration among public authorities, data provider, data users, and end users. So that's the idea behind CREO, to strengthen and develop this new system of using data.
I can take one more question, and then we will change the panel. I saw that Mr. Makula has arrived. Mr. Vesak is also here. We are just waiting for Mrs. Hohmeier. One more question. Yes, could you identify yourself, please?
Thank you. My name is Adolf Riem. I'm working in DEFCO, EuropeAid, and we have a certain interest in the Copernicus program, but as well in Galileo and in EGNOS, because I believe Copernicus data can only be well used if we know the position, and the position is exactly correct. But that's not my question. I'm a bit surprised about the answers to the first round, because it gives me the impression that you cannot use in your regions the Copernicus data as they are provided free of charge. I assume with the nice slides and maps which we have seen that this data have to be enriched, ameliorated in order to provide really the information an end user like the administration would like to find. Why I'm a bit surprised is because it's not really a self-runner. If I look around here in the audience, I would assume almost everybody has a smartphone with a GPS tracker. That was not administratively driven that we have it, but it was just a product where the industry and some clever people jumped on and it inflated the market. So from experience, I would say things which must be really on this innovative process being administrated by administration will hardly make their way into the market. That would be a pity because, as I mentioned, in Europe, if we would like to use those data, we have a strong need in Earth observation matters. We have a strong need also in, like, cities, agglomerations mapping, soil erosion, soil moisture, and so on for agricultural purposes. So from the experience which you have mentioned in your presentation, I would like to jump on the question. You mentioned that there is a strong need, or there is a need for capacity building, as we would say, to improve the knowledge of people in your administrations to make use of this data. Why is that so? Because your administration, or because the product is not there that an end user like me, as a pilot, can just put on an app, which is called Meteo Earth, and I can see wind directions, I can see wave swells, and
question,
so on.
The question is clear,
what
I think.
What makes it so difficult to use this data?
Okay. I think you've mentioned part of it. You mentioned CREO, that is a learning process, that the integration is taking place. But perhaps you can have a short answer to this question.
Yeah, so the question is whether we talk about raw data or whether we talk about information products. Because in the first part of the question you asked about data, raw data, and then you move to the application. I believe that as soon as we have the information products which are available through different applications or geoportals, whatever, it's quite easy. They can be used. That's not the problem. The problem is, in our case, the problem is to give a public administration raw data and to ask them to use it as they come from the satellites. And on this level, they are not able to do that because they don't have specific skills or the competences to do that. On the other hand, and what is quite understandable, we can say, they need specific products to fulfill their specific needs. Public administration has specific tasks to be fulfilled. So if you have task, if you have specific question, you look for a specific product to answer this question. So probably that's why the raw data, these are not the best solution for public administration, because probably more or less they will be treated as nice pictures. It was also mentioned in the first panel.
Thank you, Elżbieta. One brief remark? Yes?
Yes, of course, this Copernicus data, to get the full use out of it, have to be value-added by some processing. And that is a chance for the companies to develop a market, an Earth observation product market. So that is a big chance, I think, for Copernicus.
Yeah. And I think this is where the multiplier comes from, that actually Mr. Aschenbach mentioned in the beginning, that one euro invested into Copernicus may come back with 10 euros in created business, and it's not the public administration to create the business. They are rather on the demand side, but it's private businesses probably, or public-private partnerships. I thank all the participants of this panel. You did a great job. Thank you for introducing the results of your regions. We are now switching over to the next panel, to the panel that will then be opened up to a debate, and we will surely come back also to the issue of usability of data, of the different levels of data. I would like to ask someone from ESA to think about the presence to all those who shared the panel. Please do not forget it. And I would like to invite my next panelists to join me here on the board. Thanks. Thank you. Mille grazie. Obrigado. Bedankt. Merci. Yes. Mr. Markula is on his way. Mrs. Holmeyer, may I call you? So, great. So the next panel is complete. We are quite fast in switching panels, I think. It's really, it works well. Mrs. Capone is also here. So, wonderful. So we come to the third and last panel for today. And I will briefly introduce the participants. On my right, you have Monika Hohlmeier, MEP. Very important because she's the chair of the Sky and Space Intergroup. So it's a center of the activities we were discussing also today here. And also a member of the Budget Committee, which is considering now the you know, the MFF on the one hand, but also all the changes that are going on that have probably overwhelmed your schedule, I can well imagine. To my left, you see someone who is very important for the regions, Marco Marcula, who is has a long history in a lot of contributions dealing with the innovation of the regions, digital agenda, Horizon 2020, so he's actually knowing a lot what is going on in the regions and has been dealing with the policies that are tackling these issues. To his left, you have Andreas Wiesbach, who is the head of Unit Space Data for Societal Challenges and Growth of the European Commission. And you've already heard PricewaterhouseCoopers. He formerly worked for PricewaterhouseCoopers a long time ago. But you didn't do the study for either.
No.
Okay, good. That's also good to know. Then to my right, I'm actually honored to have two ladies to my right. You see Mrs. Loredana Capone, the Regional Minister of Economic Development of the Apulia region. Welcome, also on board. And we are all glad to have you here. And, of course, last but not least, because you've met him already on the panel, we have Mr. Aschenbach again, who will represent the position of ESA at this, and ESA Earth Observation on this panel. I'd go ahead perhaps with the first question. The mode we have decided on is that we are going to have 5-minute statements from the panelists each, and then we are immediately opening the floor to the public because the people are, they are interested in putting forward their questions and they would like to get answers if possible. Yeah, Mrs. Hohlmeier. You know that the European Commission is going to publish its the European Space Strategy. How would you see the place of Copernicus and the Sentinels in or satellites as such as satellite programs in this space strategy? What would you expect there? This is, I think, one orientative question. And how can we enlarge the participation, the use of these data in the societies? So what can the Parliament do there? And, of course, how do you see the review of the multi-annual financial framework with regard to the activities in space?
Thank you very much, first, for the invitation. I think the speech of the Commissioner in the last plenary showed that space strategy is one of the most important issues because it's a flagship program of the European Union and it's one of the key technologies of the European Union, of this world. And it's important that Europe is, and the European Union is proving competitiveness in this area, is proving that services are not only brought by Google and by huge American companies. We are a little bit irritated that American companies are even more interested in Copernicus and Galileo and in the implementation of making use of those satellites than European companies are interested. There are a lot of questions about our satellites coming from other continents. And I think one of really of the focus of the work of the intergroup and of the Commission is how to implement Copernicus and Galileo in the European Union, how to make use of it, because we have very intelligent people, we have a lot of services that are needed, and especially Copernicus and Galileo are a lot of public administrations and of villages and cities can make use of it if they want to do it. So I think we have to inform them. That's the first point. The second point is you always, if something is new, you have to convince the persons that this is more helpful than the things they had before. Because, for example, for emergency planning, for in the agricultural area, we are discussing a lot about protection of plants, how much chemical things that we are using. So if you make using of satellites, you use much less than the others. This is very cost effective. This is good for the environment, and at the same time you have a good production of the things that we eat. So and for water and so on. So you can make use of the satellites in the area of environment, in the area of biodiversity. You can make use of it in tourism. You can use it in planning the cities. So there are so many possibilities to make use of it that we just, I think it's very important to inform everybody about it, how to make use of it. And on the other side, I think that cities and regions are asked to have specialists who know how to make use of it, because not everybody is used to these kind of services and to make offers in these directions. So a lot of services can be brought to cities, to regions, if you make use of those satellites. We have paid for this a lot of millions, a lot of billions, not only millions. So I think we should guarantee that not only United States, very good companies are making use of it and then presenting a lot of offers to our regions. We should do it ourselves. We have companies, we have very clever people, we have very clever startups, we have people are well educated, coming from every area of business branch, and we have to know that the sector, the space sector, and this is the reason why we are very interested in making use ourselves of those services. The space sector itself is hundreds of thousands of working places. So we are always talking about social life, improving our social life. We only can improve this if we are competitive and if we are creating new jobs with innovative services. So, and from those satellites are really coming new services. Services that people like. Today we are, every day we are looking in our weather channel, in our smartphone. What would we do without a satellite? We would have no weather channel, even not for the planning of our party. But how would it be to make use of it if a region, for example, has a strategy for their tourism? If there are strategies, there are regions making use of it. If you have a strategy, for example, in my own area, we have a strategy in the environment about protection for the forests. So we make use of the satellites newly now. So they are totally enthusiastic about it because they had possibilities they didn't have before. They saw where they have more problems in the forest than they ever did before, because before they tried to do studies and analyses, but they didn't make use of satellites. Now they use satellites and they are totally enthusiastic. They have a new program, they have a new office, and a lot of people are really enthusiastic about it. So I think space, we have to make aware our population and our cities and regions that space is not something only for defense or for something, it's very nice to see a new star. That's nice, but we have real things on the Earth and we can make use of those satellites to create new offers and new possibilities here in every village, in every city, in every region. And the European Parliament is very interested in to implement especially Copernicus and Galileo really here on Earth.
Yes, thank you, Monica. This was a very enthusiastic.
Yes, I like space policy
presentation. I think you should by some occasion join these workshops of the Nereus network. It was and you're the third MEP who actually speaks up that enthusiastically. I think it's indeed we have in the previous round we had discussed some of the issues and the lack of skills that you've mentioned came up, and also a lack of matchmaking between the demand side, the public administration, and the problems that need to be solved, and the offer side on the company level, so that there seems to be a need for more communication on both sides so that we have this matchmaking effect. Mr. Makula, you were dealing with innovation for many, many years. And now you are in a position who, in a little bit like, you know, an eagle's eye on all that. What is your impression? What are, according to your view, the main challenges for the regions to use satellites for innovation?
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. And great to have so many people here. So, because this very often, especially if within the Committee of the Regions, we think about the even the digitalization used to be the topic that most of the mayors or regional presidents said, I fully support, but definitely I'm a bit scared on what it will bring, and I definitely don't want to be the rapporteur on that issue. So it was easy for me then already several years ago to volunteer immediately, okay, I can be the rapporteur for Digital Agenda for Europe and many related activities. So and this has actually given a good focus on what we can do and what is already available, because first of all, let me stress that we defined, we made a short 5-year priorities for the whole Committee of the Regions. So, and that was approved last year by our plenary, and we start with the sustainable growth, not whatever growth, but sustainable and increasing jobs. So we need to focus more on that. And then there we define that it's very much the change in the mindset, so encouraging cities and regions to take a stronger role by experimenting, piloting, taking modern knowledge to active use. And that means as well increasing, encouraging entrepreneurial spirit, so a lot of startups. In many cases, what the startups are looking for or how they are connected, so that to use the modern technology to operate for the fully functioning digital single market. And then recently now, when every region has their own smart specialization strategy, so we can more and more build on that, looking what are the spearheads of the regions, and then encourage European partnerships between the regions who have a same strong interest. And this means especially, so then when we think about the satellites, the research based on that, or new experimenting, so that definitely that is bringing a strong added value to the economic development. We need, even in the times then when we are short of money and with the financial difficulties, so we need to have the activities related to satellite research and testing, new implementation. We need to have that in different parts of Europe. That's my first point. My second important part is now, if we think about that, just a couple of weeks ago, the ministers agreed and signed the Urban Agenda for Europe. And that is very much so how we can, on a city level especially, create new solutions. So there it's as well to take the modern technology and modern knowledge in active use. And that means more, let's say, open innovation, encouraging regions to use what is already available, and that there in this Pact of Amsterdam, 12 thematic areas were defined. Many of them so definitely need more data and information. And that's why your topic today is so crucial, because that's one of the most important ways to provide the exact data online in a way so that it's always updated. And what we already stressed by the Committee of the Region 2010 and 2011 when we reviewed the Digital Agenda for Europe, so that regions should be more encouraged to move the regional information modeling. So use the data information, have that publicly available, and use that for the open data development, so that when cities are part of the providers of the kind of open innovation platform, so open data is encouraging this new kind of development. There are two streams on that. The one is really especially on startups and new kind of growth businesses when this open data is available, so new solutions, new apps, so the whole spectrum of digitalization is providing a lot of the other new elements for many development sectors. But the other is actually closely related to that, it's the urban planning, urban design, because there as well, when we have the data of all the, let's say, all the traffic development, all the energy development, whatever is happening, so we have sensors, but as well, so take both from the satellite perspective and then integrated sensors measuring the information and collecting that at the same time and looking from that what is happening, what can be done, and so that is really, really key instruments in moving what we call the smart city. And there we need the pioneering cities, pioneering regions, and that's what we are challenging our own members to do, bring their city, bring their city, region to be a pioneering on this or that. Every region can be a pioneer, and that makes a lot of sense, so then we are then kind of using the knowledge, best practices throughout. These are my, let's say, second and third important point. Then I definitely want to stress that we have a lot of the new knowledge both provided by with the ESA, but as well OECD reports about space sector playing an increasingly pivotal role in the functioning of modern societies. Even there, looking one figure that I think it's very, very important, so that the customer services or downstream activities account to 58% of the global space economy. So it's more and more kind of people-driven or people- and cities-driven activities which are then linked to the business development. And this means as well that with the Committee of the Region, we definitely strongly welcome the recognition of the local and regional authorities in the EU space policy, and we would like very much to see a few more regions to be playing an active role on that. And thanks to your network, so this has been a good step forward. And this means as well so that it will encourage cities and regions to create their open innovation platforms, as I said, so using the existing and incoming data. And that's a strong move in the EU innovation policy, seeing the importance of space policy as well. But let me now finish by three kind of concrete examples where we see this especially important. The one is definitely then climate change. So there are, in your report as well, this growing use of Copernicus across Europe's regions. So there are a lot of good examples on this. So on how that is important, this Copernicus activities are important for this climate change. And if we take the EIT climate kick at the moment, where more and more regions are becoming associate members, so using the provided knowledge and testing that, and so there we need this new development. The other then concrete example, again as well some examples here, is the disaster management. I was just a bit more than a week ago in Firenze, where we jointly with UN, we agreed on certain concrete steps to moving further on, and we are bringing European regions to take a more active role on the disaster management, looking the development globally, but assisting this kind of pre-information that what we need, and on that, again, then space satellite technology is a crucial one. And my third example is the Arctic dimension, looking what happens at the Arctic Sea at the moment, how much the big nations, US, China, Japan, Russia, Canada are there, but we, the EU, is there as well, although we should take a stronger role there, and then what we can do with the space technology is really to detail the information about the different elements, then the whole environment, the ice, etc., and impacts there, but so much is happening that there so at the moment, so that's a crucial element for our economic development as well, not only environmental issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. I think very, very important three points, which we can later on also come back to in the debate. Minister Loredano, you're going to speak to us in Italian, so let's wait and give everybody the chance to take their headphones on. Yeah, and it's what for those to remember, Italian is channel 4 and English is channel 2 in the headsets. So, and if everybody's ready, I am glad to give the floor to you, and you will probably tell us what we've heard now on this macro level. You will go down again to the regional level and then explain us what your region is doing. Perhaps you're one of these pioneering regions that was actually mentioned.
First of all, thank you. Let me take the occasion to excuse me because I made you wear the headphones, but generally, you know, I don't express myself using notes, so I don't want to use my really bad English, which is much worse than having to use headphones. So I have chosen the less painful solution. So let me first thank you, Ms. Toia, who allowed us this opportunity to meet all together over here within the rows. We can see again all the rows, some colleagues. I can see lots of other members and actually creators of this project. I thank you all for the work that you carry out every day, always trying to improve day by day within the cooperation between regions. Let me thank as well Mr. Ashbacher for the work that is actually carrying out and that is going to keep doing. So rather than just thanking him, I wish that we will be able to keep working together in the future again. Thank you all for being here. The region of Puglia has focused quite a lot on the aerospace sector, and it keeps doing that within this same sector. This is part of our smart specialization, and this is a sector where we have also invested a very important financial resources. Just during the last programming, we devoted to space 50 million euro of investments. So I'm not just talking about planning, but I'm really talking about expenses which have been done. Why? Because we are convinced that the technologies deriving from space in particular can provide an overall help to all the productive sectors of the economy. This has already been done. In general, I'd like to sum up in a few words, in a nutshell, all these topics about the space which are important for us. First of all, the services, then the quality element, and then the possibility to connect the services. They are really the main objective of the space planning. I'm talking about the services which can improve the quality of life of citizens. They have to improve the quality of environment, of the production sector. Space technologies can have an important way for the improvement of services, and I will show you later why. Quality is not a target. Quality is the path towards the target. So how can we all engage together in order to improve that situation? How can we improve the connection of different competencies? a very famous intellectual of our age used to say that, but I'd like to provide this as a principle of life. A scientific discovery not just important. It's important that the connection, all the consequences which come from these discoveries, which are linked to everyday life. So being able to connect technical innovation, for example, with the needs of tourists, with the needs of citizens, and the needs of trade operators can be something paramount, and that can be the real revolution indeed. Steve Jobs, when he found the icons that he wanted to insert in our smartphones, at the end of the day, hadn't really invented anything at all, because images were already existing in those days. It has always existed. It just connected images to a need to have an easier service to have in order to be connected compared to the previous digital technologies. I think this is really true for everything. So technologies which do come from space can be extremely useful, and the services which actually derive from science, from space science, can be particularly useful for everybody. This is what my colleague Olmai was really saying beforehand. What is it that we can do at the end of the day compared to the space in order to improve some performances of the managing activities within a particular territory? The very first task of an administration is to choose which services do you want to provide. Do you want to improve environment? Having drones can mean having everything which can come from satellites and microsatellites, and that can have a consequence on the improvement of environment. If that is the target, you have to diagnose the environment. And information coming from microsatellites are very important for diagnosing the environment. So transposing this data coming from satellites through softwares does not just allow a good diagnosis of the system, but also good therapy to apply. And I can claim that it does allow as well to carry out a very big amount of employment. The percentage in terms of employment for IT engineers, for physicists, for aeronautics engineers, and so on, for a whole set of job categories, and new people with just a degree would have difficulties in finding a job if these disciplines didn't exist, is really amazing. So we do improve services, but these services are improved through an application of technologies and of work which is much wider compared to what we used to have in the past. Achieving all these, of course, does imply investing in these opportunities, and we're doing that through the support given to companies which are active in the sector of research, companies who develop research through innovation in the sector of their own headquarters. That's for this reason that we created a consortium in Puglia, which is in charge of creating microsatellites, in charge of making the diagnosis of the Earth, the territory, the environment. And these companies develop softwares which do transform in open data this information. And this open data, to be true, can be also used to transform again the open data for other subjects, other operators and companies, or citizens as well, at the end of the day. So these companies realize the most important services that we were mentioning beforehand. This is a first application that we can think about. Another application point could be provided by the implications for the climate. We have spoken about climate changes. We have a research center in Puglia. It's called the CMC, Centro per i Mutamenti Climatici, Center for the Climate Changes, organized by Professor Navarro. It is very important, and it does support everybody who's in charge of sea management, environment activities, climate changes. So in this case as well, research, innovation, services, applications, and then employment at the end of the chain. Why all these activities, because of these activities have to become real, we realize that we have to put together a system of incentivations in order to promote the development of these activities. So we need to provide incentives for research, for the application of the research, and also for production of some mechanisms which can actually make this research become real. So we use the FEDR funds to start with, and of course these make us understand the importance of regions within this dynamic we are talking about. What is the real value of the regions, and what is the value that regions intend to provide in redefining European strategy? I'm quite sure that because we are part of Nereus and because we have the common target to increase cooperation between regions, this is really paramount. I'd say this is really the commitment that we need in an absolute way. I reckon that transposing these good practices between the different regions all together can certainly be an encouragement for all the regions, so that we can actually then redefine European strategy. And that's the reason why we want to be part of Nereus. We have been part of it, and that's why we want Nereus to be more and more a coordination subject within the programming for the regions, and we want to create new alliances and better relationships between, for example, the different activities which are carried out within specific regions and all the others. And we also want to promote the development of projects which do involve more and more every single company. I want to end in quoting a data that has really impressed me. We have nowadays an extraordinary opportunity, the fact that we actually work for smart cities. So in terms of inclusion, in terms of capacity to master all the phenomena related to environmental pollution, in terms of educate the citizens and companies to respect the environment, a smart city is to start with a cultural element. You can't build a smart city just through an administrative program. In order to do that, you do need to be really aware of what you're doing. And this is true for the companies in terms of their own needs. These needs very often is not very well known by the companies themselves, and this is really the central topic. The cooperation networks are helpful for the companies to better understand and know the necessary technologies and science. They can better understand this science, and they can then produce services which do use that particular science, which can be a benefit for the community. I'm a local councillor, and then this is really the final goal, because being a politician means improving the citizens' life and succeeding using what is the best technology available ever for people is certainly something very important in our main target. Thank you, everybody.
Incredible that you are a regional politician. I think you should inspire also the European level and the national level. It's really such an enthusiastic speech. Thank you. Andreas, a lot of
thank you.
The participants of the panel have already addressed of how the Commission sees all that. And we've heard already that we are in a crucial moment of the review of the MFF. We have other things to do, and I'm glad that you nevertheless could join us. When you look at the things that are discussed here, this what the Commission calls user uptake, include the people, spread the data, make it available to more circles. Which concrete targets does the Commission set to those who are delivering these services and who are producing the data? So, and which benefit you would expect from Copernicus data particularly? And final additional question would be, where do you see the line between public services and private companies?
Thank you very much, and thank you very much for inviting me here. I could probably go on for quite a long time about the questions that you've posed, but I will try to be really very brief, because it's maybe a little bit of a preview also of what we are looking to do in the space strategy, at least on a more general level. So once again, thank you for inviting me, and thank you also to our colleagues in the Parliament, in the Member States, but also very much the entrusted entities, ESA being the first one of them, for really the excellent cooperation that we've had on Copernicus. Copernicus, I think probably the best place to start is to indicate how Copernicus changes things with regard to the past. Copernicus is a game changer, I think, for Earth observation in Europe as a whole for two reasons. The first reason is that we now have an operational program which guarantees data provision basically into the 2030s. So anybody who wants to build a business case or for a public service is unlikely to do so if they're not sure that the data is going to be available. Having a satellite program which can guarantee that data for the next 15 years at least offers that predictability and planning certainty which we've never had before in Europe. The second key thing about Copernicus is the free, full, and open data access, which is, for us, has been a prerequisite of making the data available to as many user groups as possible. And that's also something which is quite recent. The Americans opened up their Landsat data basically at the end of the last decade, and what they saw in terms of the data uptake was quite dramatic. Coming to the space strategy itself, I think that, as has been expressed already by our commissioner and by our director general in this very building, the maximization of the socioeconomic benefits of space is going to be probably the main objective of this strategy. It's called the return on investment. As I think Mrs. Hohmeier has already said, we have invested a significant amount of money into these systems. So the question is now, what is the return on the investment, and what are the main uses of bringing the benefits of space to the rest of the economy, be it on the public sector side or be it on the private sector side? The approach which we will take to user uptake, I think, will rest primarily on three pillars. The first pillar is really to ensure the easy access and usability of the data, and this forms the basis of absolutely everything else. We can take a host of other measures at whatever levels, but if we cannot assure that the data is available in a predictable manner and is accessible and usable easily for those users who do not necessarily have the technical knowledge to do so, all the rest is a little bit by the wayside. The second pillar of what we will intend to do is really promote the innovation and the exploitation of the data, what is normally called as the downstream sector, or in the previous panel, somebody called it extremely well the translators. The translators between the raw data and the final user. The final users do not necessarily have the knowledge of how you would address this data. If you're working in the agriculture sector, or if you're working in a public authority, or if you're working in oil and gas, or if you're working in whatever sector, you cannot be expected to be able to make sense of petabytes and petabytes of raw data that descends from satellites. That role can only be fulfilled by what has been referred to as the translators. This can be industry. This can be research and development institutes. I think within the Copernicus program, that key role at the moment is being played by the Copernicus services. So we have six thematic services which take the raw data and they translate it into a higher level processed products, which can be then applied in different use cases more effectively. So that's more on the supply side. And then the third pillar is really the demand side, which is the end users and stimulating the uptake of the data, both in the public and the private sector. In the private sector, at the moment we're seeing really three main sectors where this is being used, and these are agriculture, insurance, and oil and gas, so the energy industry. In the public sector, there are a host of applications, many of which we have heard already, so this can be urban development, this can be transport, this can be natural hazards, this can be monitoring of change management. But the key word there really is creating demand and awareness. Because it's a sector which is still quite young, most of the demand for Earth observation products comes from the public sector. It does not come from the private sector. So about 65-70% of the demand is actually on the public side. So the public sector has quite an important role in creating the critical mass, allowing the rest of this industry to develop. Now, having identified those three pillars, maybe I can be a little bit more specific about what we would like to see happening over the next 3 to 4 years. I think it's really a combination of there are two key words. The first key word is creating an enabling environment, and the second key word is creating an ecosystem. Now, the ecosystem is something which, at the moment, we're seeing, and again, I refer back to what Mrs. Hohmeier was saying about the United States. If we're looking at the companies who are trying to enter this business in the United States, they are not really specialized space actors. They're specialized IT actors. Now, the reason, and this is really the challenge, having worked previously on electric cars, alternative fuels, various other things, it's quite difficult to make industries who don't usually have the habit of working together work together. In this case, when we talk about an ecosystem or an enabling environment, what we're really trying to do is put together the domain of space, the domain of ICT, and all the thematic applications. Once again, as has been mentioned before, the main challenge of the user uptake, as you call it, strategy, is the vast number of areas in which this data can be used. It's quite difficult from the European level to start pinpointing exact areas of application because they're frankly anywhere. They can be in health, air quality, energy, agriculture, monitoring of the sea's currents. It's quite difficult to have a strategy which pinpoints absolutely every use case area, not least because many of the applications of this, particularly related to big data, we haven't even seen yet. I think there are applications which we can't even dream of at the moment, which will be made available by the ability to process the data. And there's a big step change, which I think we strategically have to be ready for. And it concerns, it's a little bit like a fairy tale, it concerns the past, the present, and the future. At the moment, what's being done with satellites is largely ex post. There is an earthquake somewhere, a satellite passes over it, we determine the fact there's been an earthquake, this is the damage, this is what we should do. Increasingly, we're seeing a move to what we call near real-time and quasi-real-time applications, which moves the past to the present. So this is what is happening more or less now with a small time lag. I suspect that the main economic value will be in predictive analysis, i.e. in the future. And the ability to, I'm not talking about a modern version of the Oracle of Delphi, but what I do mean is that the ability to be able to predict crop yields, in meteorology we're seeing the value already, the ability for, say, shipping companies to save money on the basis of going from A to B, not by saying you take a direct line, but you take into account the current, and you take this route and you save X number of millions of euros per year just on the fuel cost. This is what I mean by the value of predictive analysis. And this can be applied to as wider area as basically commodity pricing, to health, to disease movement, to wherever else. So we're only, I think, at the start of the revolution of what we're seeing. More specifically, we will basically, together with our partners in ESA and EUMETSAT in particular, improve the conventional data dissemination, which is basically users downloading the data. But as importantly, we're going to move, the word platform is being used a lot nowadays. We're going to try to move, I prefer the word ecosystem, but we're going to move to an ecosystem-based approach which is able to exploit the potential of ICT and big data. Because when you're delivering a data volume which is going to reach nearly 50 petabytes a year before the mid-2020s, you cannot assume that the users are going to download all this data. So what you need to do is bring the users to the data rather than vice versa. And to do that, you need an enabling environment where this can be done. And this is what we will try to set up in the years to come. It's risky, yes, certainly it is, and I think it's riskier than the public authorities would normally be accustomed to. But very clearly, this is where the world of ICT is going, and I don't think that once this has been repeated already, we can miss this boat. Secondly, I think that we will act on the interoperability of data, because the value of Copernicus does not just come from the raw data, it comes from the ability to combine different data sources. So this can be remotely sensed sources, satellites, it can be drones, it can be planes, but it might be data which has absolutely nothing to do with Earth observation at all. So economic data, health data. We will in turn also, I think, do a significant effort on communication and outreach because, as has been said by virtually everybody who's spoken, we need to make and raise awareness of this program. We will try to set up a system of Copernicus relays, which is of particular relevance, I think, to the regional dimension that we talk here. These are the practical on-the-ground users who we intend to link up in a network and basically use as the multipliers of the different other activities or the toolbox that we will set up. We are going to establish, I think, a program for skills, including through the KICS, on the internationalization of SMEs, as well as support to startups and new ideas. And we're going to promote, I think, both innovative procurement, as well as set up something called an FPA or a framework partnership agreement, which would allow us to together with actors in the regions and the member states, to basically co-finance projects, which would leverage the uptake of this data. I come to the last part, which is your last question. I'm sorry, I've been too long already, which is the boundary between the public and the private. This is essentially, Copernicus was set up to deliver authoritative information on the environment and security. It was not originally set up to deliver economic returns. We hope it will, but we should never forget that the original part of this program, or purpose of this program, was to deal with the environment and security. So there's a trade-off to be made here. What is a public service, and what should be delivered by public authorities, and what is left to the private downstream sector? So it's, the Commission is working on this quite actively at the moment. Take the Copernicus services, for instance, because there's a link between these two. Copernicus services are what you would call a public service. Yet the sourcing of the products which they deliver also come from the private sector. So in a way, these services act as a source of demand as much as a source of providing a public service. The balance, I think, there is that we it's just an industrial policy question, frankly, because in the years that I've dealt with industrial policy, there's been one, regardless of the agreements and disagreements and whether you need a horizontal policy, a sectorial policy, there is one thing on which consensus is always there, and this is that the key pillar of any policy to industrial development and to develop markets which don't yet exist is certainty and planning certainty and predictability. This is absolutely needed by the industrial actors, and that is what the Commission intends to provide by saying, not that this is the link, this is the difference between the public and the private. It's not really about the public and the private. It's about saying the core of Copernicus is this, and this is what we deliver on the basis of our data and the services. And what is outside this perimeter is for the downstream sector. And I hope that is what we will be able to provide in terms of the, not the public-private, I would like to actually repeat this point. It's more about the core versus the downstream rather than the public-private. So I will stop here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Andreas, for these very interesting insights. I think it shows that we're doing this meeting at the right time, and it's we're in the middle of a new development we are going to face, and I think everybody who's taking part in it, be it in Nereus or on another level, can be perhaps proud of being among the pioneers of a new movement as it comes to satellite data. When you compare now the beginning of our meeting, Mr. Aschbacher, when you saw the discussions in the very beginning, and you've heard now the different remarks of the challenges that people have defined on the regional level, what are the main learnings for you during this conference? What are the takeaways? And are you optimistic that the European companies will catch up with their international competition to really make Europe a competitive place among the other competitive regions of the world?
So thank you. Being the last in the row of giving these introductions, I put aside my notes because many of the good things have been said already, and really respond a bit to the statements which have been made, and in particular what you said, what we could take away from this panel, and what we think has to be done. I think what, as it was said very clearly at the beginning also by MEP, Hohlmeier, we have built up in Europe the best infrastructure to monitor the Earth system from space. And I think this is acknowledged, is accepted, and many people would say Europe has done a great job, as I also said at the beginning of this session. So I think we have really created something very unique. And Europe has proven its excellence and its expertise. Where we are having a small deficit and where we have to invest much more, and I think this was said quite nicely by Andreas Weisbach, is that now we have to convert this capacity which we have into use of data, and we really have to make use of what we have built up and to the benefit of the economy, to the benefit of society, to the benefit of everyone. And this, I think, is the big challenge which I see. We are having world leadership position in Copernicus with the Sentinels and the services and the in-situ measurements which are integrated in providing really excellent services. However, how can we now make use of it? And Mrs. Hohlmeier was saying that the U.S. May take good advantage of our investments. Yes, that is true. But I think Europe should also be very active and define its response to the U.S. Dominance, which is driven mostly by ICT companies, not necessarily, and I fully agree what Andreas was saying, by the expert knowledge, which of course also exists in the U.S., but I think on the expert knowledge, on the quality of the value-adding services and the value-adding industry, I think Europe has an extremely vibrant economy and extremely vibrant excellence which we should make use of. And I think there we have to invest to really convert this into real value for our economy, for our society, and also for decision makers both at European level, national level, and at regional level. And this is something where I know the Commission is now working very hard. We are supporting the Commission wherever we can. Also on the European Space Agency side, we are putting together right now a proposal for our ministers for their decision in December, where we are proposing a package of measures and activities where, in complement to what the Commission is planning, we want to make sure that European companies are well placed to make good use of this investment. For example, we are putting on the data usage and data exploitation part a package together worth some €300 million over 5 years, which is within our envelope program, ENISA as it is called, which really complements the investments and the activities made by the Commission. The second point I would like to make, and I come back to what Mr. Makola said on the three topics of priority, climate, disasters, and the Arctic. By coincidence and without having spoken to each other, these are also priorities which we have identified within the ESA context and within the European Commission context as possible candidates where Copernicus could evolve into the future. We are having today, as I said before, six Sentinel families which are taking the measurements over the next decades. We are thinking, or we are realizing that this is an excellent system, as I said. However, policy priorities are changing, they are evolving, and new priorities are upcoming. We have heard the three. Of course, climate is very much linked to COP21. Europe has played a leadership role in putting the Paris Agreement together, but Europe also needs to take action and to show that we are not just producing good paper, good commitments, but also to do something to measure the implementation of this Paris Agreement, for example. So there we are talking with, with our partner on the European Commission we want to establish a carbon dioxide monitoring system for Europe, but not only for Europe, a European contribution to a global system, but ensuring European independence of such a carbon dioxide monitoring system. And this would be a possible evolution of Copernicus in terms of adding a new Sentinel-7, for example, along this line. Again, disasters, Arctic would be other candidates which we have identified as priorities. However, I should underline that the prioritization and the user demand and the policy driver in this case is the European Commission. And I would like to acknowledge at this occasion Mauro Facchini, who is also here with us, the head of the Copernicus Services Unit, who together with Andreas is really RD focal points within the European Commission on Copernicus. So we are all working together there to not only sit on our laurels and say that we have done something very nice. If in order to keep leading worldwide, we have to evolve the system, we have to make the next steps, and the next steps is really to address new policy changes as we see them. And I think at this point I would like to stop this intervention. Thank you for the initial thoughts, and of course we are very keen to answer the questions we have. Thank you.
So this is your moment. We are opening the floor. We are waiting for your questions. If you speak, please introduce yourself. Speak slowly because we have very good translators in the background, but they need to speed up with you. They did a great job so far, so big. Well, thank you for the translation so far. I mention it now because I always forget it at the end. So, I'm waiting for your questions. You have already put one. Just wait your second. First, please, I can see your number, which is actually 169, please. Yep.
69.
Yeah, that's you.
It's me. Good evening to everybody. My name is Tiziano Mazzoni. I'm a member of the steering committee for Tuscany in Reus, and I speak also on behalf of the Tuscany Technological District that was born under the Regione Toscana administration. I would like to say one simple thing. Our region, in Tuscany, there is a traditional seat of value chain in the field of optics, photonics, and optoelectronics technology. Regional and national authorities, which have sites in Tuscany, are currently experimenting with Copernicus Sentinel data. The Earth Science Department of the University of Firenze, that is a center for civil protection in Italy for landslide risk, uses Sentinel-2 data for landslide forecasting and monitoring. The Tuscany Region Laboratory for Meteorology and Environment use Sentinel data, Sentinel-2 data for monitoring of land use change, and the National Institute of Research, IFAC, with the Horizon 2020 project Aurora, is going to use data coming from Sentinel 4 and 5 for ozone profile forecasting and monitoring. My question is, which initiatives does the Commission envisage at the aim to support regions which aim at the role of, Copernicus technological hub for processing a new application development, and also, as the case of Tuscany, the management, the setup and management of test site in support to Sentinel calibration and validation activities?
Okay, that's a very... Usually I would actually gather some questions, but I think this is a very important one, whether they are, the Commission is going to see some Sentinel hubs, some, let's say, pioneers or regions that, if they start now, will get some special support so that the Commission gets a lot of real experience of this adaptation of data. So that could, of course, be a very interesting motivation for an uptake of use. If you have a competition of different regions and you are among the first who can actually do that kind of hub. How do you see this, Andreas?
Thank you very much. It's a, I'll probably split the answer into two parts. There are vertical policies and there are horizontal policies. I'll start with the horizontal because these don't specifically concern Copernicus but are EU policies across the board. So when we talk about the horizontal policies, what we're really talking about are Horizon 2020 financing, smart specialization, which is extremely important in the context of the structural funds, because these are all funds that can be used to provide financial support to the setting up of basically hubs or centers such as you mentioned. The horizontal policies also include what we would do in terms of skills, in terms of what we would do with data exploitation, training materials, basically all the support functions, which can be either technical, outreach-related, or monetary. Now, the vertical policies or the vertical activities pertain particularly to the Copernicus program itself. So we leave aside for a second Horizon 2020, structural funds, skills, so on. We intend to do a couple of things. The first thing that we would want to set up already before the end of this year is something which we call a system of Copernicus relays. It comes from French, so it comes from the idea of a relais Copernicus, which are really the on-the-ground users or hubs in the different regions and districts of the Union, who are able to act as multipliers for the uptake of Copernicus, providing both technical knowledge and also the outreach knowledge. We would put at the disposal of these not only a support office, which we intend to create, which will basically act as a central point to provide all the information and support needed, but we would also look to set up something which we're calling a framework partnership agreement or an FPA, which is what I mentioned briefly in my presentation as well, which would allow for a degree of co-financing of different projects, be it at the national or the regional level, to support the development of new products and the uptake of Copernicus. That's maybe the short answer to the question.
Thank you. More questions from the There was one, actually, with the blue, I can't see your number. Sorry. Yeah, but it's you. Yes, indeed. And then I had you in the front. Then I have two, three, and four. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. My name is Nicola Pergola. I'm from Basilicata region. I work at the National Research Council. And then I also representing TERN, which is the regional cluster on Earth observation in Basilicata region. Basilicata is also a region of Nereus, so I'm also part of the Nereus network, and because I've been involved in Nereus since many years. So I come to the question, but I would like first make a brief introduction regarding the raising of awareness.
If you can limit this to 2 minutes, yes.
Yeah, of course. Thanks. Now, I just would like to say that raising awareness is, as many of the speakers have already said this evening, is very, very important for the user uptake of Copernicus. This event, this project, is an Nereus project, is one very successful example, a big example. I can bring also another small example, which is a catalog that in Basilicata region, we as regional cluster of Earth observation have created just to raise awareness of what are the capabilities in terms of services and products based on Earth observation that can be provided. So we disseminated this catalog in public event. We published it on the website. This is available and can be achievable for people who are interested. But having said that, my question is quite similar to the previous one. Is related to the fact that, in my opinion, raising awareness is important, but is necessary, but perhaps is not sufficient to really engage the end users in using Copernicus and Sentinel Earth observation data. So my question is, you as representative of regional, national, and European authorities, have in mind or have you planned to use to implement some support actions or procurement, innovative procurement mechanism to help especially public users to be engaged in this game, to be involved and to really help to stimulate this demand, especially the public demand, and then to develop a market, a downstream market in this field. Thank you very much.
Okay. I would forward this question perhaps to Loredana. Would this be... Would you be able to say, did you develop a market in this field? And do, for instance, could you help out here?
Sì, anche se...
Yes, definitely. I believe that the main objective of this question was to understand what the European institution can do in this term. Well, we worked to promote the diffusion of these services and the creation of course of research centers and networking between companies and research centers in order to guarantee a collaboration. This is of course is not enough if we don't have an underlying European strategy, and I would like to reiterate that regions have and the power of executing what they are told, and actually they can also invest their activities in broader projects. So it's very important for us to know that the Copernicus project goes on, that we have a collaboration starting from September regarding European strategy, European space strategy, that would be an important pillar for regions, not only for member states. And in this sense, it would be very important to organize networks and platforms like NERIUS that provide services to their members in order to share best practices and to support them in the building of better programming and in the building of a network of enterprises. When we talk about enterprises network, it's very important. It's very important to link undertakings that work in the same region, because sometimes we incur the risk of having different enterprises working independently in the same territory without even collaborating. At that point, international collaboration, it's only made by local authorities and not by private enterprises. In this sense, I think the institution should work on it and support them. Thank you.
Something from
Kirkus. I just wanted to add from the European Parliament's point of view, we cannot create the market, but what we can do is to give enough budget in the issues of research, in the issues of market analysis, in the issue of public procurement procedures, and if the different programs are giving answers to those areas, where I think that the budget is not enough at the moment, because the budget is really low, and we have a low budget, especially in the implementation issue. So I think that the Parliament will focus on this issue, that in the implementation area we need more budget. It's not a huge amount, but the amount that we have at the moment is not sufficient to really improve the implementation process. So this will be one focus of the Parliament, where we're trying the MFF to talk with the member states and to convince, I think Commission is convinced, but the Commission is fearing, or with the member states, especially the civil servants of the finance ministries, who are very resilient in the issue of giving more money. So it's always up to the Parliament to be let's say, the negative part of insisting on more money in certain issues. And I think this will be one part, because if we have paid billions for having those satellites, then we should spend some millions in implementing in the implementation of the possible services it offers.
Good point, Andreas. Do you see? Do you share this view?
Yes, he shares. I'm absolutely sure.
It's yes, of course, I share this view. It's a the point is reasonable. If you look at the split down, if you look at the split of the budget, and you look at the amount of money that we're spending on the space infrastructure compared to what we are spending on the on what you would call the value added, of course there is an I don't want to call it an imbalance, because satellites are expensive, but there is but let's just say more is being spent upstream than on the downstream side. I want to be a little bit more also concrete about what you say, because what you're talking about is really putting together supply and demand. And there are only, I think, two comments that I would like to make. Firstly, public procurement. I think one of the things that we will try to do in the next, basically also included in the new space strategy, is to make use of the new public procurement directive, which was adopted back in 2014, particularly what concerns cross-border procurement and what concerns innovative procurement. Because in the end, as a European institution, it's our role also to look at the European dimension. Now, these markets are still quite small, so the ability to be able to pull together demand from different public authorities, say from different regions, I think represents something which is easy to say but quite difficult to do. So what we will try to do is maybe help a little bit to hold the hand and help those local and regional authorities who actually generally want to engage in cross-border procurement. The second thing I want to draw attention to is what we call pre-commercial procurement. We had the first case or a first call launched for this last year, with the end for the calls this year. We intend to repeat this call under Horizon 2020. So we will try to use pre-commercial procurement as well. And finally, the more general point, I want to come back to the point of the networks, the relays, and the FPAs. There are commonalities between the needs of everybody. because, one, we all have to implement European legislation, but also because if you're looking to monitor payments under the Common Agricultural Policy, this is a need which every member state has. If you have a need as a local authority to monitor urban sprawl or urban planning, it's a need which everybody has. So fora just as like these ones here, which is where you bring together and you exchange the best practices of what's possible, are actually really quite useful for the simple reason that this is where you can see what your colleagues are doing from across the Europe, because their needs are likely to be very, very similar to yours. Of course, there are differences in the sense that monitoring ice conditions is likely to be relevant in Finland, but not so much in Spain. But I think there's a degree of commonality there, which these kinds of fora help a lot.
Josef, another brief remark, then I have five more people on the list with questions.
Okay, I will be very brief. Fully supporting what Andreas was saying, that we have to make emphasis or we have a real effort to make use of this data. At European level, I think there within the various services of the European Commission, we can do much more than we do today. We are already using them, but I think there's a real effort required to spread them and to make them much more used in the Commission. But also, and that's why we have the conference here today, in the regions. And I think in the regions we have Nereos, who is doing an excellent job in promoting the use of space within the regions. I should say that today's event, unfortunately, is the concluding event of a contract which we have with Nereos, but I really hope, and we will do everything to continue, because for me this is essential, and I think a very, very important partner, and of course with the Committee of the Regions and other partners. And then just an add-on to what was said, yes, of course we have to make use of the data, but I would like to just recall what I said before. It is not enough to rely on the existing infrastructure. We have to evolve it. We have to keep pushing the envelope in order to remain the best in the world and really add new capacities and address new policies.
Okay, I have, as I mentioned, five more numbers on my list. The first one is 92, which is you in front. Then please prepare 179, which is the 113. You are aware? Then 263, and then the lady 59, and then the one, it's probably 83. And this will be 62? Okay.
She's not 83.
Okay, good. So, and this will be probably it. Please be very brief, because we want everybody who actually registered for questions really to forward the question. So 92, please.
Okay, thank you for asking a second question. One of the I'm Koen van Berne of the Aurora program, which was also mentioned by one of the other speakers. One thing I see a lot in Earth Observation Services is that there is a clear need amongst multiple organizations, to give an example, the need to monitor air quality in public organizations, but also for private organizations. At the same time, there is a technology within private organizations that are providing services to monitor the air quality based on Earth observation. And still, it is very difficult to make the business case. Whereas there is a clear need, organizations seems to be willing to pay for it, but still it's difficult to make the business case and to mature the service. My question is, do you share my experience with these type of services? Do you have an idea why, and do you have a best practice how to overcome this problem or this challenge? Maybe if one can provide an answer, that would be great. Oh, okay.
Yeah. 179. Sorry for addressing you by numbers, but I don't know your names.
Okay. My name again, Adolf Riem from DG DEFCO.
Yeah.
Personally, I believe that for our work, if you allow to go a bit away from the regional aspect in Europe for our work in development cooperation, the use of Copernicus will bring something like the change from the analog telephone cable to broadband cable, where you have the transmission now of hell of a lot of data, which before could not be done. So it will change also our work most likely. My question, I have basically two questions and one recommendation. My question would be, as far as I understand, for the moment, the satellites provide a look on the Earth, on the water. In development cooperation, we could make use of satellites, and certainly in Europe as well, which are looking into the Earth, if that is possible, to replace something like airborne survey, which is very cost-intensive by airplanes, so to search for Earth anomalies and indirectly by this for resources in the Earth, but also to look into old waste heaps in huge agglomerations like in Cairo, we have huge garbage dumps and nobody knows what is in it. That could really help to rework those things and to come over some inherited charges. Now, the question would also be whether satellites could look into sea and into water for stock management of fishing, you know, to help developing countries to better manage their sea resources. And possibly to look for aquifers. That would be quite okay. Good. The question here as well, as a secondary part, how long would the development of such a satellite take? Next question, cooperation. Apparently, the European regions have gathered already some knowledge in using this Copernicus data. How could development cooperation make use of this knowledge? Is there some kind of a network where we could tap on the experience of those regional experiences? Last not least, the question of commercialization is coming up. I believe that it could be good if the Commission, either Research and Development or even DG CROW, would launch some kind like a competition within this young researchers program, what we call in German Jugendforscht, and there to announce a specific prize for the best application developed by such a program for the use of Copernicus data. That would spread the message and meet the engaged people.
Okay. Thank you. I think these are three questions already, so we make a very, very brief tour. First point, which will answer two questions, is commercialization. Does anybody in the panel know about a positive example? Yeah? Could you be brief? Then we have the second question, which I would forward to ESA, whether satellites could look into the Earth and into water, into the seas, and then and this would be again to Andreas probably, whether a cooperation with all the satellite activities and DG DEFCO is in the view.
On the commercialization and the business case, yes, I agree. These are not easy markets. They're not easy markets at all. They're very young markets in some cases. They don't exist. There are a couple of examples. There is an example in France where there is a company who is using Copernicus data to basically help the growing of wines, so in vineyards, for monitoring the quality of the soil where it's being grown in order to basically improve the quality of the wine. Similarly, there is a similar service being offered by a small company in Germany which monitors the entire fields of the different farmers to basically identify irrigation needs, to identify nutrient needs, etc. There's a case where I think, but sadly, this is a European company which is actually operational in Silicon Valley, which has just signed a contract with RWE in Germany to monitor all their wind farms on the basis of Earth observation data. There is a case in, let me just recall, I think the case is actually in oil and gas, and I think it's being offered to Petrobras in Brazil, where there are companies who are helping with the monitoring of the offshore platforms. I mean, I'm just picking the first ones that come to my head. So there are examples, yes, clearly. But for this, you need a predictable flow of data.
Stefan, about whether satellites can look into the Earth and into the sea, and whether this is only a dream or something that will be the next generation of satellites. And then I have heard that Roya wants to add something on development cooperation, right?
I will try to be short, although the question is very complex and there's a long answer that could be given. But there are some sensors that can look up to a certain depth into the Earth, especially radar sensors. And the longer the wavelength of the radar, the deeper they can penetrate. Of course, then they would be limited at some point of time. However, this has been used in the past to discover, for example, underground archaeological structures or riverbeds covered by sand, which you could not see with the visible eye, but you could see it with the radar sensors. However, they can penetrate, depending on the wavelength, of course, up to, say, a few meters or maybe 10 meters or 15 meters, but this is really the limit. However, on water, it's similar. You can have optical sensors that, of course, you can look through water like with your eyes, but again, the penetration and getting information there is, again, limited in depth, so you cannot look very deep at to shallow water, as we call it, which is probably in the order of 10, 20 meters. However, and this is, I think, the more important point here, we can retrieve indirectly structures from underground with something that surfaces or that is visible on the surface. In geology, as you would know very well, the structure which you see on the surface, of course, is an indication of what happens underground, whether this is different areas which can be used for resources or other things. Also on aquifers, we have found a very interesting technology where you actually measure the use of aquifers, or the extraction of water, because the surface sinks in exactly, and there's a technology called interferometry which allows to change detections at the surface, which of course is an indication of what happens underground. And this technology is very precise. You can measure changes in height of a few millimeters or even in the order of millimeters, so extremely precise. But of course you need to make other assumptions what is underneath in order to then estimate what the water extractions would be. And I think I'll stop here. It's, as I said, one could explain much more, but this is a very short answer.
Okay. Roya, just about brief about the cooperation. And can I only take one question? And then I was told we have to leave because the room is only available until 6, and we are already after that. But you can ask your questions, please. Don't be shy. Please ask your question during the reception afterwards.
Yes, thank you. I will be very short and invite everybody to discuss further with us through the cocktail. But thank you for your question, and I would like to highlight that we on the Nereus platform have a group working on space solutions for development aid challenges. Bremen, our founding region, has launched the initiative. We organized with them together last year a workshop where we invited experts and discussed and saw practical examples. The group continues. They scan currently relevant EU and ESA programs to see for funding opportunities and plan another meeting to bring both communities together, and the Bremen Development Agency is a partner to this initiative.
So must I stop now? Or may I take this one question, 113, please?
Thank you so much. So I'm Grazia Maria Fiore. I work at Eurisi. Since 2007, we try to promote good practice exchange among peers, regions, local authorities. So, briefly, last year we implemented a survey for public authorities using satellite-based services. 45% of the respondents were actually regional authorities, and only 18% public authorities working at the local level. As opposed to national and regional authorities who took the survey, local authorities report less technical and organizational challenges, maybe because the systems they use are less sophisticated, but more material challenges, meaning they have more difficulties in finding, in procuring these services. So my question is, how can the Commission, but also the Committee of the Regions and other stakeholders, support local authorities to identify these services, cross-border, of course, but for local authorities, also territorial proximity would help a lot in the sustainability.
I'm so sorry, but please go ahead during the cocktail party. When you leave this room, some nice people will guide you to the cocktail room and enjoy, continue your conversation. I would like to thank all the panelists for their great share of work today. It was very...